The Women of Ill Repute, with your hosts, Wendy Mesley and Maureen Holloway.
Well, we have a very interesting guest this week with a hell of a story.
I'm actually really excited. I'm thrilled to be talking to Steve Williams. Spaz is his nickname, which has been around forever. He's one of the greatest computer animators of all time. He's Canadian. He started out at Sheridan College, which is Toronto's famous animation program. He ended up going to California, started working at George Lucas's Industrial Light and Magic, or ILM, where through James Cameron's movie, The Abyss, he ended up developing, I don't know, the liquid people?
The water people.
It kind of looked like, I don't know, maybe like a male appendage with a face, or maybe it's just me.
No, that's all of us. So this led to the metallic shapeshifter, for lack of a better description, in Terminator 2, which ultimately led to Spaz working on the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park, specifically the T-Rex.
Yeah, so without exaggerating, I mean, he changed history. It changed special effects in movies forever, computer-generated imagery or CGI. I mean, that's all that we see now. It's all that matters, for better or for worse. And Spaz was behind it all, along with a number of other people. But he never really got credit for that. A lot of other people stood up at the Oscars and said, yes, it's great. We've won another prize. But anyway, it was a big deal. He never even got a decent thank you for it all.
Well, he was a rabble-rouser, heavy drinking, hard partying, cigar-smoking shit disturber with authority issues. And that's according to his friends, because I haven't met him until now, or I'm about to meet him. And eventually it all caught up with him.
Yeah. And then last year, a documentary filmmaker and a really good friend of Spaz's, Scott Lebrecht, turned his camera on Spaz and made a film called not Jurassic Park, but Jurassic Punk. And it's kind of huge. It's like trending, as they say.
Well, it was originally called Spaz, but cooler heads prevailed, I guess. And it is fascinating. I watched it last night, and I just to show you that I watched it all the way to the end, towards the end, you popped up.
Not as a dinosaur.
No, not as a dinosaur. No, you were interviewing Spaz back in the day, and you're cute as a button.
Well, I had more hair back then. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, you were adorable. So anyway, the movie is a really compelling look at where filmmaking is going, as well as the story of the rise and fall of a great artist. Does he rise again? Well, we're going to find out.
So Spaz is joining us. He's at his home, his beautiful home. He says it's the Ozarks. I'm not sure. It's kind of a big secret. And he's got a barn where he makes stuff, like weld stuff, blacksmith stuff. Spaz, it's so nice to see you. It's been like a long, 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 long time. Spaz Williams.
Welcome.
Well, Wendy, it's been 29. Maureen, it's very nice to meet you. Wendy, it's been 29 years.
Yeah. Well, Undercurrents was kind of a big deal. It was my favorite show, but I don't remember a lot of it. But I remember you. And part of it is because you were a legend, but also part of it is because you took me to a shooting gallery and I held a gun for the first time.
Oh, that's right. I forgot I took you to a shooting range. I did. Yes, that is true. I figure, you know, guns are, you know, kind of thing. I've never shot an animal. I've never killed an animal. Never would. Right. Kind of thing. But they're mechanisms and they're fun. They're like toys. And of course, I'm driven by how things work. And that was just an extension of that.
I'm going to jump. There's so much that I mean, I took copious notes. It was such an amazing glimpse into a time and a place and a person, people. But I need to know, throughout the whole documentary, you're making something that you've got a welder's helmet on and you've got equipment. And we never found out what you were working on.
Well, I always build, you know, I basically make tools to make more tools. And so in the case of blacksmithing, I picked that up about 25 years ago. And I was just fascinated with making tools, right? So the idea about running anthracite coal in the documentary, that it was shot over 10 years, you know, kind of thing. So I was always building like welding tables and putting stuff together. So that you saw it sort of in progress. And motorcycles in various states of disrepair, you know, and cars in various states of disrepair. There's nothing worse than completing a project. Nothing worse. Completion is horrible. It means you immediately need another mission, as I stated in that thing, you know. And the documentary, you know, was pretty good. I went through a bad divorce. I went through a very bad time. I started drinking too much, and I felt in a terrible hole. And I thought, you know what, Scott, if you want to shoot a documentary, of which he had shot sort of chronologically, he saw the fall. And I said, no problem shooting, because this is the truth. And if you're going to do a documentary, you might as well tell the truth, not a fluff piece.
Well, it certainly wasn't a fluff piece. I mean, we can get into that. It shows you kind of drunk out of your mind and having fights with you.
Oh, yeah. Entirely. It was horrible. I lost the love of my life. I was, you know, I loved Ellen, and she was going this way. I was going that way, you know, and we didn't hit it off. And it was terrible. It was terrible. And I basically just wanted to forget reality at that point. Not that I don't want to forget reality all the time, living in a cartoon that I do, right?
Let's go back for, first of all, I really encourage whether you've never, if you've never heard of Spaz Williams, but you certainly heard of his work or probably seen his work. And the documentary we're talking about, Jurassic Punk, is available. You can stream it. And it's fascinating. But if you haven't seen it, you're probably wondering what we're talking about. And I'm just going to encapsulate it just for anybody who doesn't know. You were basically, in every sense of the word, the enfant terrible of CGI. And Boy Wonder goes down to California and then gets involved in some of the biggest projects happening. And it culminates, I guess, in Jurassic Park. When you designed that T-Rex, you built the skeleton and created this thing, and it made the movie. I mean, there wouldn't have been a Jurassic Park as we know it. And you kind of let the genie out of the lamp after that.
Well, yeah, it was a Pandora's box. That is correct about that, you know, and I made comments and I got in a lot of trouble for it back then because I had made the statement. Everyone's going, isn't this wonderful? I said, well, sort of, you know, because it was more of a personal challenge as opposed to it saying, oh, I have to do this for this movie. You know, it became personal. Little did I know, right, although I kind of, you know, erred on the side of caution. And I told this to Wendy, too, 29 years ago when we interviewed. I said, you know, I think what I've done is I've actually created the end of filmmaking, as odd as that sounds. And of course, I got in a lot of trouble for those statements. Like I used to get in a lot of trouble all the time for what I said, speaking the truth, God forbid. And I said, you know, all we've done is we've unleashed this incredibly powerful weapon. And if it's not used responsibly, it will destroy traditional storytelling methodology. Jump ahead 30 years, I was correct. You know, the protagonist used to be the story and individual actors, and the antagonist was visual effects. Now is completely reversed, compounded by video game influence, of which is a bigger industry than the movie industry in itself, right? So essentially, these movies now are marketing pamphlets for video games and that first player shooter type things. So that is the problem. And so we only had 50 shots in Jurassic. We had 35 shots in Terminator 2. We had 18 shots of the Abyss and the pseudopod back in 1988. So these are small vignettes that were intercut through the film in order to enhance the story, not drive it, but enhance it. So now you have shots where no film gets away without 3,000 shots, right? So all of a sudden, as I said, the antagonist being the visual effects are now the protagonist.
James Cameron, he was the one who sort of, he was the director of The Abyss, where you got started, and then you, well, with CGI, and it went on from there. And now he's done Avatar.
And I think he made three at once. I think he's made the sequel to Avatar along with parts 3 and 4.
He sort of acknowledges that and it was something that you predicted 29 years ago, was that actors would become less important, that it would become more about the effects, whereas you used to sort of see a glump tail go through, and then you created a monster that you would see in certain parts. And now it's just like, let's do everything by CGI. But he's the one who's winning the Oscars, or is up for the Oscars anyway.
Oh, no, that's fine. Yeah, but Cameron, who's a good kid, Ontario, from Kapuskasing, Ontario, right? And he remains a very good friend. But, you know, he's a visionary as well. I mean, things, it's metastasized in my view, right? He wanted me to work on the original Avatar back, and he threw it down in front of me, the treatment back in 96 when I was filming Spawn on second unit. And he threw it down in front of me at his house. And he had just come back from doing the underwater sequence for Titanic. And he goes, I'm working on this film. And we had heard rumors about it. Right? And he was sick. He was very pale. And apparently he fired the craft services guy off the coast of Newfoundland. And the craft services guy spiked the soup with lithergic acid dithalamide, LSD. And 30 of them got sick and went to hospital. True story.
I think I've heard this. But I did, wow.
That's what happened. And he was like pale white. So we sat at a table and he threw down. He goes, what do you think? And they're basically trying to butt, because Weta, the facility that inevitably ended up doing the first Avatar, right, with Joe Leteri, who I brought in for Terminator back in 1990 from Metrolite, he was trying to butter up ILM to try and do this film, right? And of course, his treatments, which a treatment is what, 30, 40 pages? His were called screetments, which are like 150 pages long, right? So, and I'm like leafing through and I'm like, oh my God, it's the old story. How are we going to do this? But every time I looked at what Cameron wrote, it was, how are we going to do this all the time?
But you never took no for an answer. You always, like people would say, that's impossible, Spaz. You can't do it. And you go, yes, I can. And somehow you just knew that you would be able to find the bones on a dinosaur and create a moving dinosaur.
To me, it was a very simple equation, you know, in a way, because we're dealing with a matrix of pixels. The human eye sees 10 million colors. We calculate 16.7 million, as we discussed 29 years ago, Wendy. And pixels have no conscience. You know, it's just a matter of time till they're organized to anything is possible visually on the screen. And that was always disagreed upon, right, by my superiors, right? The ones who have the retirement homes in Hawaii now, right? So.
Not that you're bitter. Not that you're bitter.
It's not that I'm bitter. But you know, I knew what was coming. And I consider it's not invention, it's really archaeology. I'm really uncovering what's already there. And had I not done it, someone else would have.
Let's go back to the idea, or it's not even the idea, it's what's happening, that when CGI and special effects take over, and I mean, I feel, and I think you've said this, and I agree, that you get these franchises like Marvel. And I mean, they're fun, and people like them, but it's the story is completely engulfed by the, I don't like the battle scenes. I don't even care anymore, right? It's just a lot of light and noise. And, you know, this feeling that filmmaking has now taken a back seat to CGI. But then they said the same thing. The same thing happened when sound came in, you know, 100 years ago. Fantastic films were lost because nobody wanted to see a silent film. And then nobody wanted to see a black and white film as soon as color came in. And then I look at my kids who are now, you know, in their 20s and love film. But when they were kids, they didn't want to see anything that was made in the 20th century.
There is a relativity question, right? So the thing is that when cave paintings, when the cavemen started painting in blood and berries on the side of the wall, that was not considered art. It was considered sorcery, right? And it was a snapshot of reality. That was reality on the wall. Then the Italian frescoes come along, compounded with religion, all of a sudden the cave paintings become expressionism or art, right? Then Lumiere comes along right prior to the Renaissance and starts laying looms down and transferring quadrants onto canvas. Then the Renaissance comes along and these all become scientific standard at that point. And every time displacing the previous form to become art or expressionism, then jump ahead to silver nitrate film, black and white. That is a snapshot of reality. Even though it's still subjective because it's a flat two-dimensional medium that you're viewing it on, you know, and then like you go ahead to motion pictures and Technicolor and 5700 stock, you know, Technicolor, three color separation, right? And then all of a sudden a black and white film becomes expressionism art. Then Martin Scorsese comes along, does Raging Bull in 1980, and he shoots it as a black and white piece, an art piece, even though the standard at the time was 5700 stock Kodak, Technicolor, right? So now moving ahead, now we have, you know, AI. And here's the thing about AI. It already happened. It's called us. And all we're trying to do is replicate ourselves synthetically. That's why humans are enamored with trying to replicate themselves synthetically, right? That's why the blueprint of computer graphics is to try and replicate the way that nature renders an image, you know, as a flat two-dimensional medium for now. Have you ever looked at the way that nature renders an image? It's beautiful. And it hasn't won one award. Not one.
Hey there. Just so you know, Mo and I are not just the queens of podcasting.
I'm not sure we're even that, but do go on.
We're not part-time cowgirls.
We just made that up.
But we are writers. We're writers.
Wendy and I write a newsletter on Substack. It's a weekly roundup of thoughts and experiences, sometimes serious, often not.
Yeah, you're pretty funny. You write about falling down a lot. You write about your dog.
I do. You write about sex and politics and COVID.
All very, very serious things. We have a few thousand subscribers, both free and paid.
And you could be one of them if you'd like. Just go to substack.com and look us up by name or go to our website at womenofillrepute.com and sign up there. We'd love to meet you there.
And now, back to being the queens of podcasting.
Yeah, sure.
The Women of Ill Repute.
I'm trying to think. I hate to make you go into the personal, not that you're not open about everything you are, but it's this whole authority thing. It's like, I keep being reminded of that letter that was in the documentary that, you know, you went back to ILM at some point and said, hey, I'd like to come back because there's like cool stuff I'd like to do. And they were like, screw off, Spaz. Like, you were rude to us and you hate us. But you think you still think, you know, you still think that like all the people who got all of the awards that they don't know. And that you've got, like, you still, I don't know, but you don't have the answers to everything. Like, at the end of the documentary, you end up kind of, there's a scene of you being drunk and saying, I've kind of lost it and I've blown it. You're kind of all over the place. You're like the most brilliant person who can't get his own shit together. You went back to ILM and ILM said, no, like, bugger off. You were mean to us.
Well, I wasn't really mean to him. And the guy who wrote, I wrote that to John Knoll. Now, John Knoll's brother wrote Photoshop, and I was a bug tester on software, and I was excellent at breaking software. And incidentally, for your viewers, every piece of code that was used to do Jurassic, Terminator, and Terminator and The Abyss was Canadian off-the-shelf software, all of it. And all the animators were Canadian from Toronto. But we had proprietary code, but it was U.S. money. It's very interesting. We'll get into that later if you wish. But that battle, that letter that was in there was written by John Knoll. It's redacted, obviously, but I have no issue talking about it. Now, John wasn't a bad guy, but he was more of a fan of the product. And as Mark kind of alluded to, a lot of these guys deified, you know, the product. We did not deify the product. We were more interested with sort of breaking convention and moving ahead because of this notion of anything you can imagine visually over T for time equals inevitability. It was a very simple equation. Now, when you have people that don't have visions like that, they try and retain convention, right? Because it protects them. So that becomes like a dual challenge to break the back of that and also to research new techniques. You know, by example, you know, I hired the first women animators at ILM, five of them out of Sheridan College, right? Canadian. And they said, well, you know, girls, I said, I don't give a crap who they sleep with. I don't give a crap if they're gay. I don't care, right? If they can animate, they're in. It's like female blacksmiths. The best blacksmiths I've ever met in California were female, right? Three of them. And I know them all personally.
But do you like Canada? Because it's, you know, you said to me that coming to the States was like, in Canada, there was only 8 colors and here there's 20 colors, or maybe that's in the documentary.
It was. And you guys know, being from Toronto, because, you know, I mean, look at me, you know, kind of thing. So, and I wasn't going to cut it at university. I did do postgraduate with OISE, because of the computer side of it, but that was just pure luck. It was just pure luck. So I was never going to sort of fit into the mold of like, you have to go to Western, you have to take a BA and you have to, I was not going to fit in that mold. And so when you're an unconventional thinker, right, you're sort of seen as a heretic, especially when you're growing up in a Mrs. Bouquet from Keeping Up Appearances type of environment. Sort of the traditional old English style. So, you know, I was stuck in this box. This is where I found in the United States when I got down here. I couldn't believe the freedom. And it didn't matter where you came from. You could be a peasant, but you still had a path to try and accrue with your knowledge and move into something where you believed in what you had. Whereas I felt I was kind of squashed all the time in Toronto. That was the feeling. Oddly enough, I had to use Toronto software, and no one believed what I was saying in Toronto about digital humans and digital creators. They thought it was nuts.
They didn't believe you in California either.
Well, they didn't believe me. No, in traditional visual effects, they didn't believe me down there either. But you know, at least you're in a facility where, you know, the product, you know, the whole thing with Star Wars, oddly enough, is that no one was going to church anymore. So they're learning about good and evil from a movie franchise. It's so crazy.
That's so true. The Church of Star Wars.
It's so crazy how it all sort of came down.
Spaz, before we move away from the personalities involved, and I mean, you sound like you've come to terms with an awful lot and you don't seem to bear anybody any grudges, but, and I don't know whether this is you or the documentary filmmaker, it needed a villain. It was a piece that needed a villain. And I feel that Dennis Muren kind of filled that pretty well. Do you harbor any, I mean, he didn't thank you. He didn't publicly acknowledge you. We took all the credit. I mean, I hate to paraphrase Wendy again, but are you bitter about this?
In the case with Dennis, you know, me being a sort of Canadian North York junior hockey player, right? You know, I didn't know how I ended up with this stuff, man. I just like cartoons, you know? So I ended up down there. But after we did The Abyss, we were working on The Abyss. Me and Mark were working on The Abyss. And Dennis was, he wasn't even around for it. He was working on Ghostbusters 2, traditional, you know, conventional effects film. So the last 2 weeks of production, he shows up, right, and starts sitting in dailies, right? And I didn't even know who he was. And then I go back to Toronto, rent a place in Unionville, just have a party for the entire summer because I'd done finished all my animation for the 18 scenes. And then Mark would call me up and say, it's weird, this guy Dennis is coming in and like making comments on the final stuff, you know, like the look of just the opacity of the film because he didn't know anything technically. And all of a sudden he gets the Oscar for it. And I went, what the hell is going on here? This guy wasn't even involved with the process at all. That is so weird. And then I thought, that's strange. And then Terminator 2 comes along, right? So I'm reading the script, you know, and I'm going, how the hell are we gonna? I said, that's it. I have to build a human being, right? And that's what I did and had the first walking test of the thing. Dennis wasn't even involved with the process because he's never even touched a keyboard. So the same thing happened again. He gets up and gets the Oscar for it. I thought, what the hell is going on here? So you see in the documentary, we were taken out, you know, for a lunch, right? And said, Spielberg's coming with this film, Jurassic Park. Okay, 91. All right. And we were just finishing Terminator at the time. And we're, you know, I was living in the pit, but it was all secret. So that's why I just sat at that table. I said, why don't we just build everything in computer graphics, man? Oh, no. Can't do it. No way, man. Murin, as I said, he blank because he didn't understand, you know, Fangmar, all of them, you know, no way. So I didn't listen to authority again, because had I listened to authority, we would not have been being interviewed right now. You understand? That's the interesting way it works. And so that's when I thought, I'm going to ambush them, literally. Kathleen Kennedy, Frank Marshall, you know, Murin, Janet Healy, Ed Jones, Lucas, I'm going to ambush them with this test. And I did. They came walking in that room, and I had a Barco monitor position on a Monday morning. I ran the shot the night before on a Sunday. I was in there late, making sure all the frames dumped NFS to an Abacus A62 digital frame store. And I had that cycle running, and that's the first thing they saw when they walked in, and everything changed.
The T-Rex skeleton, for those of us who aren't getting lost in the numbers.
And not only that, that was a forward kinematic system, which meant three channels of animation per leg. Pivot point, pivot point, pivot point. So I had to have three channels to make sure the feet didn't go through the ground. Then Soft Image out of Montreal came out with what they call an inverse kinematic system. So that meant I could grab one point and move it around in real world space as opposed to rotational data, like a forward kinematic, and it would modify. We couldn't have done Jurassic without it. So, but the first bone test was actually a forward kinematic system for your technical listeners.
Who are just, you know, having orgasms right now. And I don't blame them at all. So you're teaching, aren't you?
No, I'm doing nothing. I call it putter paradise. I just putter. That's all I do.
Yeah. But don't you miss it? The actual creation.
Yeah, I do. I do. And as I stated in there, I was talking, Jamie Heineman from Mythbusters remains one of my best friends, right? So I talk to Jamie pretty much almost every day. And we're always working on stuff. So we're working on another thing right now. And he is very much like myself, that he needs a mission constantly, right? So we're always mining, wormholing into these areas of physics and math. I think right around the time I met Wendy, you know, 29 years ago, you know, I'd written this paper for Harvard Law Journal on the resurrection of deceased actors, right? And of course, everyone thought I was nuts. But as we know today, it is capable. And taking stills and actually make them move, you know, there's nothing visual that's not possible. And these were the objections I ran into specifically from guys like Murin and John Knoll. And I'm not trying to piss on these guys, but, you know, guys like Knoll, by example, is basically a museum curator of antiquities he had nothing to do with.
It happens almost in every business, though. The old resists the new and they don't understand.
It does, Maureen. It's not isolated to film. Wendy knows this in entertainment. You know, it is definitely that way. The politics is just, it's the human condition. You know, what are there, 500 billion planets, literally, in this galaxy? And there's 3 trillion galaxies, you know, and the universe is 13.8 billion years old, and the Earth is 4.5 billion years old. You know, all this has happened before, and it's going to happen again.
You see very much a big picture, but I'm wondering, like, having a documentary made about you and have it be such a big deal and have it show everything, like you're like wandering around drunk out of your mind in some of it. You're madly in love and
you're in the shower with your filmmaker.
I didn't care. My view was I sort of had spent a life pursuing truth, right? So if he wants to do a documentary, I don't want to be this fluff piece where certain stuff is hidden. I was going through a bad time at that time, of which he exposed a lot of that, you know, in the end. And that was 5 years ago now. And I was going through a terrible divorce. I loved Ellen very much. You know, she was a blacksmith as well. You know, and it's kind of like I had nothing. I'd spent all my life building that house. I physically built everything you see in that documentary. I built. I poured the concrete. All the stones came from the creek. I built everything, you know, and boom, poof, it was going away. And it was terrible. I had nothing at that point.
My stupid question is, the documentary is out. It's 10 years of your life that's smushed into an hour and whatever. Does it change anything? Because you've got such big ideas about the universe, and yet here's this documentary about you and your life and your genius and your failures. I just, what has it meant to you?
Well, it's very difficult to watch. You know, I mean, as my father used to say, who was, you know, he said, Saturday's heroes are soon forgotten, you know, and referring to football specifically, because he played for University of Toronto and Argos and stuff. And so it's hard to watch, you know, it's very difficult to watch, especially the fall, because I just don't want to be reminded, because it was like, I never saw myself getting that low ever. You know, unfortunately, I'm way out of that. And it was really, it's very difficult to watch, but at least it's honest, you know, which I think is a lot more than a lot of people can sort of say of themselves. I mean, it's kind of like, would you allow people to film you out of control?
You know, your ex-wives, there are two of them, and your daughter, you have a lovely daughter. They all speak of you so fondly. And the other thing is your friends. You have tremendous friends. Even at your darkest, people love you and appreciate you.
I'm a nice guy. I'm not mean. I've never tried to sort of pursue a life of being nasty. And I think there, a lot of the comments of the people that really know me, as they said, that, oh, it's really a drag. They just didn't mention that you're actually a nice guy. You know, and I said, oh, no, I know. Well, you got to remember, a boy made the film. And you know the way boys are. They're perpetually trapped at age 14, 15. Like math, you know, as I mentioned, math is a boy thing to try and substitute the penis because they can't control nature. Whereas women plug their fingers in, right, and harmonize and accept the way that it is. Whereas men try and explain everything and try and control it, you know. So, you know, in the world of computer graphics, is, you know, by example, it's nothing but try to pediatrically control images, right? And so that's what's so strange about it. You know, guns, cars, there are 5,613 different mammals are still existing on Earth, driven by eat, sleep, and fuck. And the next smartest mammal can't even make a pencil. So there's something wrong already, right?
Well, I don't know if you're still making pencils, and we do a short podcast, so we could probably talk to you forever.
Anytime, guys. I love rapping with you guys. You know, if you want to talk about this, we'll get into physics, we'll get into knitting. I love sewing.
Do you? I do too.
It is so therapeutic to sew. I used to sew, and then I started sewing in data, right? So I think that my precursor, because my grandmother taught me how to sew, and I have a feeling that when I was younger, her showing me how to sew allowed me to sew data in the future.
You sew and you're a blacksmith. My sister is an artist, and she said she can't create anything. Doesn't matter, but you got to be creating. Got to be making something or you get sick.
Like after I talk to you guys, I'm going to wire up a whole bunch of 100 amp, you know, lights in the garage.
Well, also so he can see what he's doing. Well, Spaz, this has been wonderful. You're very different from all our guests, but you're very different from most people, I would think. And that's really cool. Really enjoy talking to you.
It is an absolute honor to be on your guys' show. It really is. You know, and it's so nice to see Wendy again.
I feel like it was, many ways, I feel like it was yesterday. And are you in the Ozarks? I mean, we don't want to say where you secretly are, but...
I'm in southern Missouri in the Ozarks, yes. And all the stereotyping, it's true.
Well, it's lovely. I guess we'll book something for 29 years from now.
If not before.
It's very, very nice people down here. It's completely different from Northern California. It's like the hot tub inbreeding syndrome of Northern California is real. And the sense of entitlement is real. Sadly, and I never fit into it. I never did. I've always been like a Canadian hillbilly, right? So here I am. I hold one passport and one passport only, Canadian.
Ah, so I saw the American flag flying outside of your house in one of those things, and I thought you were gone forever, but so that's good to know.
No, I'm not gone. The thing is that I consider myself a guest. I always have.
It's been lovely talking to you, Spaz. Should we call you Mr. Spaz? I think you're Spaz.
Thank you, Spaz.
Anytime, guys.
Okay, I have to tell you, I'm kind of crushing on him.
Big brain. Big brain.
Yeah, huge brain, and he's a real guy's guy. So smart and creative and funny. Although you see that more in the documentary than because he was kind of serious here. And yeah, there was a lot of technical stuff there. And, you know, we'll leave it in because for people who are into this, for people who are into animation, they're just going, oh my God, this is unbelievable. But I mean, this is Baz Williams. This is the guy who created the T-Rex of your nightmares. This is the guy that Terminator 2 wouldn't have existed without him. I mean, he's huge. And I hope he's happy. He deserves to be.
I talked about him taking me to the shooting gallery and holding a gun and being terrified. Like, I remember that, but I also remember him because he's such a, and it's true that the documentary didn't say he's a nice guy. He is.
He is a nice guy.
He is a nice guy. And that's what you mentioned is what struck me so much in watching the documentary is that both of his exes, one of whom said, why do you like the booze so much? Why do you love it so much? Please. He allowed all of it to be shown, but all of them, his two exes, his daughter, his friends, they all love him because I think he's a good person who is, and he's got big, we didn't even get into his theory of time, which is the big thing. 29 years from now, we'll be going, well, Spaz Williams wrote about his theory of time 29 years ago.
No, which, he looks good. He looks healthy. So I'm just going to hope that, that's Spaz. Hi there. It was absolutely our pleasure. We're just recording the end of it right now. So just talking about what a great guy you are. No. See how nice he is? He's calling to say what a great time he had. Spaz, it was a pleasure. And I wish you all the luck in the world. We both do. Thanks again. Bye. So that was Spaz.
He really likes to chat.
Yeah, he is a sweet guy. He was just saying how much fun he had. So I guess we'll just leave that in. He said he loved the loose format of the podcast.
Yeah, well, loose women, that's us.
The Women of Ill Repute with Wendy Mesley and Maureen Holloway. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at womenofillrepute.com. Produced and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.
Hi, I'm Mercedes Nickel, four-time Winter Olympian and host of Dropping In, a podcast with Mercedes. This is a podcast where I interview a bunch of different people. I get the good, the bad, and the ugly, as well as I share my stories along the way. Now you can drop in at droppingin.com or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. I'll see you soon.